I have a whole list of concepts that I bring in. And then as I'm listening to the track, then I'll think about what it feels like. I'll make lists of words that relate to this title. Or if I'm with an artist and I'll be like, what keeps you up at night? What's going on in your life? Try to find something real. If you're writing a love song or you're writing an emotional kind of song, I think it's important to have some reality in there. Mm. And a lot of times when there's not like a seed of truth in it, I feel like audiences can smell a rat. I like to use what I call HQ filler when it comes to lyrics, which is high quality filler. There are go-to words or phrases that are familiar, that are easy to sing along to, that we all know and love. If every word in the song is too out there, then you're going to lose your audience. Mm. So you have to keep it digestible and relatable. And then you can like throw in some zingers. Phonetics is really important as well. I like to make sure that the lyrics that I'm singing are singing the way that I would speak it. I wouldn't say singing in the way I speak it. I would say singing the way I speak it.
Right.
And
right.
So I want to make sure that the word speak is going to fall on the important note, on the money note. It's not speed by the important word in the phrase if the cadence is too fast or busy. I've been doing a lot of kind of song doctoring recently where an artist will bring me a song that's like mostly there, but not quite. Mm. And then I'll go through each line and make sure that it makes sense and that the tenses are correct, keeping the consistency of the story. So that when you read it on paper, it's like, okay, I understand what's going on. And that's not to say that you can't like get poetic and kind of cryptic. There is a magic that comes to being able to sort of insert your own interpretation of what the artist is saying. Mm. But in pop music, it's important to clearly understand what the story is, especially if you have a great story.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book, third edition, coming out very, very soon. Today, wow, such a treat. My guest is Bonnie McKee. She is a singer, a songwriter, an artist, an actress, a director, all of it. She wears so many different hats. She's most well known for her songs that she's written, including Katy Perry's California Girls, Teenage Dream, Last Friday Night, Part of Me, Wide Awake, my personal favorite, Roar. She also co-wrote Dynamite, Tao Cruz. She's co-written songs with Kesha and Britney Spears and Kelly Clarkson and Cher and Christina Aguilera, Adam Lambert. The list goes on. Actually, she has over 100 cuts. That means 100 songs that she has written that have been officially released. She has written 10 singles that have reached number one. Ladies and gentlemen, 10 singles that have reached number one on the charts. She sold more than 30 million copies worldwide. She released her song American Girl in 2013 and then independently released an EP Bombastic in 2015 and is now releasing some more music under her artist project as well. In this episode, we spent a lot of our time talking about what it is to be a songwriter in the pop music industry, and even country. She talks about country sessions as well and how the sessions work. So if you are an aspiring songwriter or an established songwriter, you're going to learn a lot from this. And she talks about the defined roles that you have in the sessions and how kind of the industry is working these days when it comes to royalties and breakdowns and splits and producer points and songwriters and how the payment is working and how that's shifted over the last few years. And how publishing deals work. So if you're interested in the songwriting industry whatsoever, this is definitely the episode for you. I know you're going to love this episode. Listen to the very end. She has an amazing answer to what it means to make it in the new music business. So fortunate to have her on this episode. As always, please subscribe to the show, follow the show, like it. However you're listening to it right now, just hit pause, hit that subscribe button, and give us a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Those really help, and I love reading the reviews. If you're listening on YouTube, give a comment. I try to get back to everybody and all those comments. Find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Ari's Take. Find Bonnie McKee on TikTok. We talk a lot about her TikTok on this episode. Find her on TikTok and Instagram and everywhere else you can find music. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram and Twitter. Visit ariestake.com. Get on that email list, and that's where you're going to get the most up-to-date information about the new music business. We send out regular emails there. Go to ariestake.com. Get on that email list. All right, let's kick into the show. Bonnie McKee, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I think I'm catching you at an interesting time. I've been seeing that you've been going to film festivals. You're like a filmmaker now. You've been like, what is it? You've won over 50 awards on this, your first short film ever. And you've like from festivals all over the world. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's insane. In quarantine, I was kind of sitting around and it felt like the music industry kind of shut down. I mean, I did a lot of Zoom sessions and stuff, but honestly, mm-hmm. I was just a little bored. And I had always wanted to see if I could direct. You know, I have a heavy hand in my music videos and stuff, but I had never written a script and done the whole thing. So I just thought I'd experiment. First, it was supposed to be like a, like something for my acting reel. Cause I wanted to get back into that. Hmm. And then I started writing a scene and was like, I don't know. I think this is kind of a standalone story. So I made a little short film, just a skeleton crew in my house and my boyfriend's house. And, I had no idea what I was doing. There's like a whole, there's a whole strategy to festival stuff. And sure. I didn't know anything about it. And so I just submitted to every festival that seemed relevant and got into a lot of them. And yeah. I ended up winning 53 awards. So I'm very proud of that. Thank you. And you know, there's a lot of little right. ones. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like small kind of like hometown hero sort of festivals. But I did get into 4 Oscar qualifying festivals. Didn't win in any of those, which would have put me in the Oscar pool. But still very proud to have participated.
That's great. And is this something that you're thinking of continuing to pursue in addition to songwriting? Are you veering? Are you straddling these lines? Are you leaning one way or the other?
Yeah, I'm kind of straddling the line. I want to turn the short film into a series. It's nice. Just basically semi-autobiographical, you know, of course, sensationalized a little bit about what it's like to be a woman and a recovering addict in the cutthroat music industry. Mm-hmm. So I would obviously write all of the music for that and hopefully star in it, but you never know. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of combine my two loves of film and TV and music.
Amazing. You know, it's not surprising that the short film is winning all these awards. Just by looking at your TikTok, it's clear that you have a handle and a grasp on amazing short form storytelling. I especially like the hitchhiker one where you kidnapped some dude, a hitchhiker, and then you did you basically indoctrinated him into a cult with a blood oath, and you know, you prevented him from escaping, and then in the end, not to give anything away, but you ate him. So it was fantastic. Yeah. That was really.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun with that. Yeah, I'm really enjoying TikTok. I was really kind of late to the game, but I love it. I feel like it's such a brilliant tool for creators and musicians, especially. Mm-hmm. And I get to kind of flex my directorial muscles in a little teeny tiny way. But it's really fun. And I love to edit, too. So it's fun.
It's great. And it's also like we use it as kind of an educational platform. And so, you know, I'll do like, you know, educational videos for artists out there and just the general in the music industry. But I like how you kind of show you had some of these videos that like, I bet you didn't know I wrote these songs, and, you know, cut to Katy Perry and cut to Kesha and cut to, you know, Tao Cruz Dynamite and all of that. And it's fun. And that's like, it's still like the short form storytelling, because it's like the setup where people are like scrolling. It's like, oh, wow, I learned something. This is actually really interesting. And then you kind of go down this rabbit hole, especially people that don't know much about the music industry. It's just like, wait a minute. This is the songwriter behind these songs. And that's – what were some of the reactions that you got to some of those videos that kind of surprised you?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people don't realize that some of the big pop stars don't write their own songs. I mean, of course, I was lucky working with people like Katie and Kesha and Tayo. that they are amazing songwriters in their own right. And mm-hmm. all of them have written for other artists as well. So it's really just like having another great co-writer in the room that I don't have to worry about pitching the song. I just know they're going to cut it, you know?
Sure.
People, there's a lot of talk about ghostwriting, which is really not a thing. We're all credited. All you have to do is go on Spotify and click the three little dots and look at the credits. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at how many people didn't realize that. I think nowadays songwriters and producers behind the scenes are more forward facing. I feel like people, because of that feature, thanks Spotify, you can really, you know, who's behind the songs, you know?
And Spotify actually came out with a pretty cool, playlist that is written by Bonnie McKee is the name of the playlist. And this is crazy. I didn't know you have 107 cuts. That's amazing and unbelievable. Did you know that it was that many until Spotify made that playlist?
I mean, it's cuts, I don't know. I mean, I've written thousands of songs.
Of course.
So, I mean, it's nice that some tiny fraction of the work that I've done has actually seen the light of day. But no, I didn't realize that. And, you know, things happen all the time where I'm like, oh, someone cut that. I had no idea.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because when you get into a session and let's say it's a session without an artist, like without a Katy Perry or a Kesha or a big artist where you know, oh, this is a song that's going to be for them and they're going to hopefully cut it and release it. What's the approach for those sessions? Do you have an artist in mind that you're writing for? Are you just trying to write a great pop song that you'll pitch, or kind of step me through that process of how those sessions work?
Writing for pitch sucks. I really don't like it.
Okay.
It's really more of like a process of meeting new writers and producers and kind of seeing if you gel, seeing if you have a vibe. And so that part of it is fun. But as far as like, you know, every time I write a song, I'm putting my heart and soul into it. And so there's really no guarantee that that's going to ever see the light of day. And so, you know, I'm thinking about releasing a bunch of demos of things that I've written, because I'm like, I mean, that's really what Sia did. And Sia's been a huge inspiration to me as far as, you know, a woman who's been behind the scenes coming forward. But yeah, it's kind of exhausting. Sometimes the label will put us in a room and be like, we're looking for something for the Jonas Brothers, or we're looking for something for Ariana, or whatever it is. And some artists are more likely to take a song from the outside, and others are just like a complete waste of time. Where it's like, okay, I know this artist doesn't take outside songs, or I know this artist has a team that they work with regularly. Like, why would they, you know what I mean? But you know, we do it anyway. You never know. You might stumble across something great that, you know, write them a song they can't refuse. but a lot of the time it's really just like dating. It's like dating songwriters and producers.
Okay. And then, well, that's interesting, because then if you do pitch the song to the artist and they do decide they want to cut it, do you get back into the room with the artist? Do they just cut it on their own? Do they rewrite it? Do they get writing credit? How does that all work?
It depends. Sometimes, depending on the artist, if they want to rewrite some stuff, then I'll go back in the room with them and rewrite some stuff with them to kind of tailor fit them a little more.
Sure.
And you know, if they don't write, then we'll just, I really like to vocal produce, because I feel like the way that you pronounce words and the phrasing and everything is very important. And I've definitely given songs to artists and had them come back and be like, this is like the way that they phrase this or the timing makes it a completely different melody. And like, I painstakingly go through my melodies and my rhythms and make sure that they, you know, there's a pattern there. Like, I really subscribe to the Swedish school of thought when it comes to symmetry and melodies. And so that can get really easily lost to an untrained ear. So I like to be there when they cut the vocal, but I don't always have a choice. So, you know, and like with K-pop groups and stuff like that, like I'm never in the room for that. Like, it just gets sent off and then all of a sudden it comes out and I'm like, great. Cool.
Yeah. Right. The Swedish school of thought. I was just reading The Song Machine, where they step you through the whole process from Dennis Pop back in the day and all of that. That's so with the and I don't know if this is a myth, but I was hearing from Dan Wilson, who, when he said he worked with Sia, and every time she goes into the booth, she changes the melody. And so it's just kind of like, we're just going to take the take that kind of works. But the melody isn't necessarily as concrete as you'd think in the writer's room. Do you have you ever kind of worked with artists where it has been like that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's really like that in Nashville. Like, melody is the last thing anybody cares about, I found. Because I've tried to be very, you know, crack the whip about melody stuff and rhythm and stuff. And and then we'll be singing it all day, and then someone will go in the booth, sing it, and they just sing something totally different. And I'm like, wait, that's... Like, I know that we care about storytelling and lyrics, and that's really my first love is lyrics and stuff. Like, that's kind of my specialty. But the longer I've done this, the more important I realize melody and cadence, how important that is and what a huge difference that makes.
Yeah. Have you done many country sessions?
I mean, yes. I've been to Nashville a million times, never had a country cat in my life. And I would think that because I'm a lyricist that I would get some Nashville cats, but I've never had a Nashville cat, and I'm like a little butthurt about it.
Someday. Well, I mean, you've done all right in the pop realm. So I guess how do those sessions operate differently, a pop session versus a country session? Is it other than kind of like the lyrics versus melody, or the chorus has come first, or how are they structured?
You know, it's a really different world. Like, songwriting is a 9-to-5 in Nashville, which is so cool. Like, everybody starts, well, I mean, not 9, but a lot of people start at 9, but I'm like, can we just like make it 10? Because that's like, 9 is like the crack of dawn to me.
Sure.
But you know, you start at 10, and usually people come in with concepts already ready to go. And also that genre is very specific and pretty limited in like what kinds of rhythms you can do, what kinds of words make sense and are actually going to get cut by a country artist. So it's a lot simpler, and also the writers in Nashville are incredible. Like, I'm a lot of times the only lyricist in the room in pop sessions, and so it's kind of a heavy burden to bear. And so it's really lovely to be in a room with other writers who value storytelling as much as I do. So it's really all about the story. The people are so sweet and friendly, and everybody's done by 6 o'clock and goes home and, you know, has dinner with their family and says their prayers and goes to bed.
Sure. Right. And now contrast that to an LA pop session. How do those work?
Start time is usually 1 p.m., which is great because that means I get to have a life before my session. And, you know, there's usually a track done, or at least mapped out. Whereas in Nashville, it's like everyone brings an acoustic guitar and kind of figures it out as we go. And in pop music, because like the track is so much more important in the genre, you know, there's like usually a folder of vibes ready to go. And then I do what they call top line, which is the melody and the lyric. And so I'll listen to a track and see, you know, does it feel happy? Does it feel sad? Is it party time? And try to figure out, you know, a title that matches the sound and the vibe of the track. Sometimes we start from scratch. It's just usually it takes longer. So if I only have one day with a producer or an artist, then I prefer to have a track kind of already mapped out. But yeah, so we just go in and fuck around, and sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not, but it really is kind of a numbers game. But if I feel like I have something that has potential, I very rarely only have it done in a day. And I feel like that's something that happens a lot in pop music. And I feel like the genre has suffered in recent years from that, where everything is kind of phoned in. Everyone's like, oh, we wrote a song in a day. Like, yeah, I can write a song in a day, but like, is it the best version of that song? Usually I need to drive around with it in my car and sleep on it and think about it and dream about it. And then I come back and tailor it and trim the fat, and it gets better. It makes a difference. You can edit something to death where you can like overthink something. But for me, I like to spend like, you know, I mean, ideally like from concept to like finished and ready to mix, I'll spend a couple weeks per song. I never wrote a song. I never wrote a hit in a day.
Oh, that's very encouraging.
Except for Dynamite.
That
was,
okay.
That was just a fluke. But also, I only wrote the hook on that, so.
Okay, because I saw that TikTok where you're explaining all the lyrics from Dynamite that didn't make the cut. Was that real, or did you make that up?
No, it's all real.
That's real.
All of the TikToks that I do doing alternative lyrics are mm-hmm. from my original notebooks. And I've had people ask me like, oh, did you just like rewrite that? Like, I know I got time for that. I have like several bins of notebooks.
Yeah.
And so I go through and try to find them. And there's a few hits that I've written that I just like can't find it. I'm sure it's in there somewhere.
Sure.
So I've been like painstakingly like labeling them since I started doing the TikTok. So it's easier for me to just find it and do it.
Nice.
But yeah, it's all real.
That's fun. That's great. So are there defined roles when you get into a session? Like you said, you're a top liner, you're the lyricist. And then is there a driver, a producer in there? And then sometimes the artist would be in there. Do you know the defined roles when you get into a room?
Yeah, I usually, you know, that's what publishers are supposed to be for, okay. where they sort of curate the room for you, where it's like, okay, we've got a great lyricist, we've got a great melody person, and we've got a great producer. But I've definitely been put in rooms where it's like, oh, like we both, like there's not a producer in the room. And they were like, what do we do? What are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
but I also produce. I don't push the button so much, but I'm more of a producer in the old school sense where, you know, I do a lot of arranging and I have a lot of ideas about sounds and drum patterns and all that kind of stuff. But I'm rarely credited for that. Mm-hmm. I think primarily because I'm a woman.
Mm.
And because there are plenty of male top liners that go in the room and co-produce the way that I do. And then it's just like, oh yeah, like he's a producer on it. And then when I'm like, hey, so remember when I came up with all of the different like lead lines and this and the riff and the bass and the this and that? It's like, yeah, but you're just like a top liner. So like, and by the way, top like producers get paid. If they use the song, producers get paid a producer fee. They also, these days, will get co-writing. So they'll get publishing and they'll get production fees. Mm-hmm. And then they'll also get points on the master.
Mm-hmm.
And as a top liner, I just get publishing. Mm-hmm. And so suppose like, you know, somebody gets sued for the song or something like that. It was too close to something. Like, I'm not going to get anything.
Right.
It's really insane. And like, I know that songwriters, top liners, have been charging fees more recently. I've been hearing more and more about that, which is really how it should be because I work for free. It's free labor.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years and
the
only time I've ever gotten a fee is if, you know, I'm doing something for Google or I'm doing something for Disney and it's like, you know, because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
They don't know they can get us for free.
So even like the writing camps, have you been to many writing camps where it's like a Rihanna writing camp or something like that? You're not being paid necessarily to be there. You're just there and hoping that they're going to cut one of the 150 songs that have been made during this camp or something?
Not getting paid, no. And the producers don't get paid either unless the song gets cut.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's free labor.
Mm.
And it's really insane.
Yeah, I mean, I want to unpack that a little bit of you're not getting the production credit, and how, like, and you, it's very clear. I mean, the crazy statistic out there is just like, what, there's only 2% of producers are women that are credited on some of these like massive hits and all of that. Is this something that is just because it's just accepted more in the industry that if there's a man working on the track and pushes for a producer credit, he's going to get it? Whereas if there's an established woman songwriter, then it's just it's brushed over. Is this something that the publishers need to fight for more? Do the managers need, like, where's the breakdown here? And when, where's the advocacy that, where does that come from?
I mean, I think in my own experience, it was just, I didn't even think I was allowed to ask, even though I felt like I was definitely producing. I just didn't bother to ask because I didn't want to be shut down and I didn't see any of the other girls doing that or, you know, top liners. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll just, you know, stay in my lane. And then in recent years, I've just been like, no, fuck that. Like I'm done with this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it just, you know, you have to ask up front. And so I've also started asking for points because if the producers get a certain, if the producers are getting points, then, you know, the song doesn't exist without me. So I think that I deserve a piece of that because we all know that streaming doesn't make any money, but masters can, you know, double that. So,
Well, right. I mean, it's a really interesting time right now in the breakdown of how the royalty splits work, because for streaming, the master earns 4 to 5 times what the composition, the publishing earns. The label is making 4 to 5 times more than the publisher's making. So the songwriters are making 4 to 5 times less than what the artists are making. But then, you know, and that's why they always say also, though, for songwriters, it's like you're going for the hit, because the money is really on radio, because that's the one place that songwriters are still seeing a decent royalty amount from the PROs, from your ASCAP or your BMI, when the song gets on radio. But other than that, the streaming royalties for songwriters are minuscule. And is that another reason why well, I guess when you're in a session, are you trying to go for the hit or the in or kind of trying to get the song that's going to be a single, because you know if you're just on a deep cut on the album, you're probably not really going to see much money from that? Is that, does that go into the thought process?
Definitely. Yeah. Mm. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's what a lot of us, I mean, it's fun to go in. That's fun to work on an album with an artist, because you can be like, all right, cool. We got the singles. Like we, you know, we have the ones that sound like they're going to be singles. And then now we can play around and do some more kind of experimental artsy stuff. And because I think that that is missing a lot of times, like some of the big artists, when you listen to a whole album from them, you can hear that every song, the writers went in and were like, we're aiming for radio.
Right.
And sometimes you just like, you know, like you want a little personality, like you want, you want something a little different. So it's nice to be able to play around with that when you're in that kind of situation. But when it's like a one-off thing, like, yeah, what's the point if you're not going to get it on the radio? So we're always aiming for radio for sure.
When you're in a session, and is there a structure in terms of how it starts, how and like from where you're starting and where you're hoping to end?
I mean, the goal is usually to get at least just like a skeleton down by the end of the day, so that if you want to come back to it, then you can. I mean, a lot of times people are, again, trying to rush it and just be like, okay, it's done. And then no one ever touches it again. And then I feel like the songs suffer. But usually I'll go in, hopefully there'll be a track. If there's not, then, I mean, something I do all the time, and people hate on me for this, but I don't care. I'll be like, all right, what's a great song we can rip off? What's a cool song from the 70s? What's a cool song from the 80s? Like,
watch out, Marvin Gaye's Estate is listening right now.
I know. Just like for a vibe, to be like, okay, like, you know, Rock the Casbah. Like, I like those chords. Let's like take the chords from that and then like change the drum beat and do a different concept, you know? Because I mean, there's only 12 notes in the scale and there's only so many kind of drum patterns and things that are going to work. So it's like, okay, do we want to do a shuffle? Do we want to, you know, and then I'll pull up references and be like, the vibe of this.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get lucky and it's just like, oh, like I have an idea. Sometimes I have ideas in the middle of the night and I'll record them and bring something in and be like, I've got a cool thing. But usually it's like, it'll start with a track. I like to start with a track and then find a concept. I have a whole list of concepts that I bring in. And then as I'm listening to the track, then I'll think about what it feels like. And then hopefully if I have another co-writer or an artist or someone to bounce stuff back and forth with, then we'll start, you know, I'll make lists of words that relate to this title. Or if I'm with an artist and I'll be like, you know, what keeps you up at night? What's going on in your life? Like what are, you know, and try to find something real, because that's the other thing I feel like, you know, if you're not doing straight up party music, which is great and one of my favorite genres of pop, if you're writing a love song or you're writing a whatever, an emotional kind of song, I think it's important to have some reality in there. And a lot of times when there's not like a seed of truth in it, I feel like audiences can smell a rat.
No, that's great. I mean, man, that must be such a tough line to toe, because it's like, how do you be authentic and you're writing pop, but not, you know, make it relatable, universal, so the masses can understand and relate to it, but also be authentic and authentic to that artist? Like, how do you straddle that line, especially with the artist that you work with?
I think it comes down to, I like to use what I call HQ filler, when it comes to lyrics, which is high quality filler, which is like there are go-to words or phrases that are familiar, that are easy to sing along to, that we all know and love. And then, you know, like you set up your title, or you can have an interesting, unique, kind of unusual title. But if every word in the song is too out there, then you're going to lose your audience. So you have to keep it digestible and relatable. And then you can like throw in some zingers, and then it's like, oh, that's interesting. And I was paying attention already because I could sing along with the other stuff that was easy to understand. Yeah. And also phonetics, I think, is really important as well.
Explain but phonetics.
To keep it, phonetics are the way that a word sings, if it sings well, and also how the words fit into the melody. And that's something that I take very seriously too. Where if it's the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable, can't do it.
Yeah.
And you know, there are some artists that do that a lot, and that's kind of like a unique thing that they do. Like Alanis Morissette did that a lot. And Katie's done some of that as well. But it just, it drives me crazy personally. And so I like to make sure that the lyrics that I'm singing are singing the way that I would speak it. You know? Like I wouldn't say singing in the way I speak it. I would say singing the way I speak it.
Right.
So I want to make sure that the word speak is going to fall on the important note, on the money note, or the play. It's not going to be sped. You're not going to speed by the important word in the phrase if the cadence is too fast or busy. So that is important. And so a lot of times I'll, you know, I've been doing a lot of kind of song doctoring recently, which I really enjoy, where an artist will bring me a song that's like mostly there, but not quite. And then I'll go through each line and make sure that the emphasis is on the right syllable and that phonetically everything is gelling and that it makes sense. And that the tenses are correct. If you're talking about, you know, if who you're talking to, is it a you, and then you refer to it as him, like keeping the consistency of the story. So that when you read it on paper, it's like, okay, I understand what's going on. And that's not to say that you can't like get poetic and kind of cryptic. I love stuff like that. Like I grew up listening to Fiona Apple, who is one of the most cryptic lyricists ever. But there is a magic that comes to being able to sort of insert your own interpretation of what the artist is saying. But in pop music, I think it's important to clearly understand what the story is, especially if you have a great story to tell.
You bring up song doctoring, which I get this question a lot. How does it work when an artist or someone brings you a song and you're doctoring it up? Is that how does the business side of that work? Is it they bring you the song, it's like, okay, well, now I'm touching the song, so we're splitting this equally, or do they pay you a flat fee and to kind of for your time to do it, or how does that work?
Usually I'll just like if it depends on how much I change it. If I'm just like, oh this chorus doesn't work, and then I change the chorus, then I'm gonna get a bigger percentage. But if I'm just like changing a word here and there, then it would be less. And I try to be fair. I don't have like a flat percentage that I'll take for rewrites.
Gotcha.
I like to be fair to the artist because I'm an artist myself, and I would be really annoyed if someone came in and changed three words and was like, give me half the song.
Right. So that makes sense. Quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space, and let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder, and they're very innovative, and when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative, and they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Too Lost is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with Sound Exchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue, they have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out TwoLost. You can just go to TwoLost.com, use the promo code Ari's Take for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think. So speaking of the artist, have you run into an instance where an artist or their manager essentially comes to you saying, we want to cut your song and we want our artist to get a percentage of writing of the publishing, even though they didn't have a hand in writing the song? Have you run into that?
I personally have not, just okay. Because I'm often paired with artists who write. Yeah. But I know that that happens, and yeah. I've heard that that happens with a lot of big artists. Yeah. And it's annoying because, like, the artist is going to get money from touring, from merch, from whatever appearances. Right. So, like, they're already going to get paid on the song, and, like, the songwriters get so little that I don't really think it's fair. But mm-hmm. I understand, like, for optics. And so if an artist were to be like, hey, I want a piece of the song, I'd be like, oh, sure, we'll put your name on it, but, like, you're getting 5%. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you really were not in the room. But then mm-hmm. there's some artists that come in and, like, their delivery and their ad-libs, like, if they're, like, a singer, and that kind of changes what the song, what the makeup of the song is,
sure.
Then, I think it's like a case-by-case basis, I'd say.
Sure. Yeah, I know that, Emily Warren and Justin Tranter and Ross Golan, they started this thing called The Pact last year, which basically they signed this petition essentially just saying that we're no longer going to give up writing credit to artists, because apparently it was happening a lot, and some songwriting managers are speaking out against that as well, saying that, like, you know, a big artist will come in and demand 20% of the publishing even though they didn't have a hand in writing it. So that's an interesting I didn't know that it was that prevalent, but it's nice to hear that that doesn't happen as much with you, because you're typically in the room with the artists who are also writing the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. What are you saying?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, yes, I love Justin and Ross and Emily. I have so much respect for them, and I totally agree with them. I think it's just something that I haven't had to deal with mm-hmm. that much. Like, if Beyonce comes in and wants to take a percentage, it's hard to say no to.
Yeah.
So I understand why that would be, like, frustrating, because, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if Beyonce does that or not. I'm not trying to.
Yeah, Beyonce. No, I know. I don't know. talk to me about, if you could go back and step me through how Roar came to be. Katy Perry's Roar. It's my favorite pop song of the last decade. One of the most incredible songs ever written. Thank you. tell me how that song came to be. I heard that, and it's like, I'm not just full transparency, full disclosure, like, I'm not really a huge pop fan. Like, I don't turn on pop. I don't really listen to pop as frequently as, you know, my friends and family do. But that song was so undeniable, so incredible. Just like, that was on repeat in my car every time I got in. It was just like, it was such an amazing song, and that straddled into, like yank me in, who's like, just like not a huge, like, you know, pop aficionado. Like, yeah, talk to me about that song.
Well, Katie and I had both experienced a lot of misogyny and, mm-hmm. you know, being just being a woman in the industry is not, it's not easy. And yeah. So we were sort of commiserating about that. And the track was already done. And a lot of the melody was done by Max Martin and mm-hmm. Dr. Luke. And so just listening to the track, it was like, yeah, this is a triumphant song. It mm-hmm. needs to be, it needs to feel victorious. Yeah. And, you know, we could have just gone with a more kind of generic, like, you can do it song. But yeah. I think Katie and I both had this shared experience of dealing with misogyny. Mm. And so, and, you know, and so I was like, you know, one of the most iconic feminist songs from the 60s was I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar.
Yeah.
And so that was obviously the inspiration. And mm-hmm. Just the word roar paints so many pictures in my head. When I hear the word roar, I think of mm-hmm. tigers. I think of, you know, the jungle. I think of like Tarzan and, you know,
yeah.
And it just, it really like is a movie just in mm-hmm. a word, you know? Mm-hmm. So I really love a colorful, splashy title because then there's just like a whole vocabulary that goes along with that one word.
Yeah.
It's like a theme party, you know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, we're throwing a roar party. What does that look like? What are you wearing? Yeah. What are you, you know,
yeah,
what
yeah.
are the activities? And also the melody kind of sounded like the Tarzan call that he does in the jungle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that was great. Kind of part of it too. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm really proud of that song. Yeah. And so many people, like the stories that fans have told me about mm-hmm. what it got them through range from like, you know, when I'm at the gym and I don't feel like I can do it to like my daughter had cancer. Like it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And that is really why I do this, is to connect with people. And it's really, really powerful to be able to do that on a mass scale.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I want to touch on a little bit, you mentioned it a couple times, kind of the misogyny in the music industry. Now, you've been in the industry both starting as an artist when you were a teenager to as a professional songwriter now. Have you noticed a change, a shift? Is it still as prevalent as ever, but masked in a different way, like the not giving you credit where your credit is due and deserved? Talk about kind of how it's come in your experiences in that, from like getting started until now, and is there and also like speak to the women that are listening to this and that are kind of getting started in the industry.
I do think that there has been a shift. And especially in the rooms with my collaborators, because I work a lot with men mm-hmm. whom I love and who are very supportive. And so a lot of producers are now offering points or sharing points or recognizing what it means to contribute to a track. Not all of them, but it's a lot better. And also I think that with the Me Too movement, I think that on the business side of things, that a lot of executives are running scared. And so people are a little more careful about how they talk to you mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. they treat you. Mm. So yeah, I do think that it has gotten better thanks to the Me Too movement. And mm-hmm. also I think people are just, I don't know. I feel like there's been sort of a movement as far as just empathy in the creative world. I feel like everyone's in it together. It's gotten mm-hmm. so gnarly with the streaming and, you know, nobody's making the money that they were 10 years ago. Mm. And so I think that, I don't know, I've seen a shift for sure. But when, you know, speaking to the women that are listening, I think that you have to speak up. And that was really my issue and why I haven't gotten what I've deserved for so long is because I used to not think that I deserved it. I used to stay in my lane and I'm just thinking of like the lyrics of Roar right now are popping in my head. Didn't want to rock the boat and make a mess, you know. But you know, you have to speak up and ask for what you want. And I mean, that really goes for everything in life, not just with women, but it's like, you know, people hold resentments towards the world for not getting what they feel they deserve. But it's like, did you ask? Like sometimes you think that you are entitled to something, but you don't speak up, and you really have to speak up and plead your case. So I would say just don't be afraid to ask for what you want.
That's great advice. A little bit more broad, speaking to kind of the aspiring professional songwriters who maybe want to do what you do, but don't know how to get started, how to get their foot in the door. What is some advice you would offer to them?
You know, I get asked this question a lot, and it's hard for me to answer because my story is so unconventional and also 20 years in the making. So things are very different now than they used to be.
Sure.
But I think, you know, publishers are always looking for new talent to exploit. and so they do check their DMs and they are watching online. So I think that, you know, the social media is the window to the world. Mm-hmm. That's how you reach people now. Mm-hmm. And as much as we all want to think that's not the case, that's just the facts. Mm-hmm. So I think having a social presence and posting your work and going to, if you're in LA or New York or places where these things happen, going to events, it's really hard to do if you're not in LA or New York or Nashville. There are local scenes. And so if you are in a city that is not one of those big ones, find the local heroes and, you know, get in front of them and play your song, whatever. But I think that sending stuff does work. Yeah. And also figuring out artists that, if you want to be a writer, artists that are kind of in your wheelhouse, looking at the credits, seeing who they're working with, seeing who they're distributing through, seeing who their publishers are, and then getting on their radar. I know it like sounds impossible, but like I've met all kinds of people online and gotten all kinds of connections through social media. So I think that that is worth exploring. And you know, sometimes it's hard to get a publishing deal if you're not there yet. And so I think collaborating is also very important. That was a tough lesson that I had to learn early on because I started out writing by myself. And I was very protective and I was very precious. I mean, I was also an artist, but, you know, getting into co-writing was like, was painful because it means that you have to kill your darlings, meaning you have something that you love and someone in the room is like, eh, and then you have to be like, oh, how dare you? So it's really like kind of an ego death. Yeah. Learning how to collaborate is very important. And the more you collaborate, the more you learn. Mm. And also having another writer on a song means that there's two brains that are invested in getting it home. So don't be afraid to collaborate. Don't be an egomaniac about your art. Do what's best for the art. That is like always my mantra because there's plenty of things that I'm like, oh, I like my idea better, but I can see why this is better. This is going to work. So I think collaboration is really important as well.
Amazing. That was fantastic. So helpful. So you're releasing new music. And under, this is your artist project, Bonnie McKee, right? This is the new music under your name as the artist.
Yeah. Funny story. It's not actually new. I made an album back in the day when I released American Girl, and the years kept passing and I was like, nobody wants this. And then honestly, when I got on TikTok and started posting about other stuff, like no mention of even my artist stuff yet, everyone's like, where's Slay? Where's Forever 21? Where are these songs?
Yeah.
And it's like given me this new breath of fresh air and hope that I'm like, well, damn, like all this time later, if you still want it, you got it. Like I would be happy to give that to you. So yes. I'm just learning how to do like a TikTok music campaign. I really have no idea what I'm doing. I'm watching some of my peers who I've seen get big record deals, get on the radio, playing Lollapalooza, like doing all this stuff, all from releasing music on TikTok.
Right.
And so I'm just learning how to do that. And I'm excited for that. So this is really just like, this album is going to be the songs from the vault that the fans have been asking for so long.
I love it. Yeah.
And it's really just, it's going to set up the new album because I have a new album, you know?
Yeah, of course. It's great.
But I just want to give the fans what they want and also get it out of my system. I feel like I've been like pregnant with this project for all these years and I'm ready to release this baby into the world. And I feel like that's going to be a nice feeling of closure for me. So that I can move on to the new stuff and not feel like I have this nagging thing in my in the back of my mind. It's like, what about us?
How do you decide what songs are going to be the ones, these old ones? Because you said you've written thousands of songs, but these are the actual like cuts that you as Bonnie McKee, the artist, have actually recorded. So the recordings are finished, or are these ones that you're re-recording? Are you doing the Bonnie's version now, or what's going on with this?
they were recorded. They were ready to be released back in the day. And so I've opened them back up, dusted them off, and I'm updating them a little bit. Cool. But I mean, the way that I picked them, I mean, the fans picked them.
Wow.
I mean, there's all these fan forums where it'll be like in a Lana Del Rey fan forum randomly, or like Britney Spears fan forums. And I have a few spies in those fan forums that are like, hey, like this song just leaked. Like all these songs, they've been leaking them and they've been trading them and like paying for them and all this. And I'm like, Jesus, guys, like, is it that exciting? But I guess it is. So I asked actually one of my super fans that I've befriended over the years. She's like a little Gen Z amazing lover. And I was like, all right, what's your track listing? What songs would you want to hear?
Yeah.
And she gave me her list. And I was like, okay. And then that was also on the fan forum, is exactly the same song. So I'm like, okay, well, they've decided what the album is going to be. So I'm just going to give the people what they want.
That's so crazy. That is like crowdsourced song picking. And it's like that's you get this immediate instant feedback right now, and you can actually just take it to an audience. I mean, that's like that wasn't really possible 10, 15 years ago, where it's just like, oh, what song should be on there? And it's just like they're kind of demanding it and saying, and they get to choose which songs. That's really exciting. That must feel great to have people that are demanding this music, or at least like saying what their favorite songs are, so that helps you kind of give you the confidence to know like, oh, I can release these songs and they're going to be there for me.
Yeah. And look, I don't know how robust my fan base is, really. I feel like a lot of people tune in because they want to hear about my songwriting stuff, and I'm happy to tell them, but I don't really care. It's just, if there are people out there that want to hear it, that's enough for me. I don't need to be the biggest pop star in the world to feel satisfied, just like I said, you know? So it's just important to me that there are people that want to hear it and that it brings them joy. And that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's scary because these songs are old. And as far as like my peers in the industry, like people know me, people know I've been trying to be an artist for a long time. And I'm very insecure about it, where I'm just like, oh my God, like, is this just so pathetic that I'm putting these old songs out? Like, I have a million new ones, but like, why do I keep dipping into the past? But there's just something in me that's telling me that I need to put this out into the world, and it might not do anything at all. And that's totally fine. I just want them to see the light of day, because I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and heart and soul into this. So whatever, I'm doing it. I'm doing the damn thing.
I love it. I think, I mean, it's, it's, I think we can all relate to that, as having these old songs that we really connect with, and sometimes they just need a release, and it just to kind of move on. I mean, I wrote, a breakup album from a partner I was with for 11 years, and it was like, I didn't really care what this did for anyone else. I literally needed to release it to release myself emotionally from that time period of my life. And just like, I have to put this out. I have to put this album out because I need to end that chapter of my life, and I need to move forward. And I can't move forward sitting with all these songs. And so as long as I can get them out, then I can move forward. And it was cathartic for me. It was a truest sense of the word release that I've ever experienced in my life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly why I want to do it too. I want to close the chapter on this, because it was kind of like, you know, I had all this momentum with American Girl. Everything was going great, you know.
Yep.
And then I did like the bombastic thing, but everyone, and then it just kind of went away, and everyone's like, wait, we were on board. Where did you go?
So
it feels kind of unfinished. And so I'm ready to close that chapter.
Who did you release the bombastic? Which distributor did you use to put that out? Do you remember?
I think it was TuneCore.
Sure.
Honestly, I don't know, because like I've done a lot of one-off singles and stuff, and I'm actually looking into that now, where I'm like, where do I want to put this out through? Like, I'm not even sure who I want to give it to, because I know that every distributor has their own sort of, kinks. And
I have a great guide that I compare 17 of the DIY indie distributors. I'll send you. You can compare all of them right side by side. I have this chart that I put together, so I'll send it to you.
That would be great. Thank you.
You can make that decision.
Yeah, I'm just figuring it out. But so I don't know how to do this in the TikTok era, but I'm excited because I've seen it work. And I also, I love creating the content and I love getting direct feedback from the fans. So
yeah.
Wish me luck on my TikTok journey.
All the luck, but I think you have a really strong handle on TikTok. And as you know, as someone who's known so well as a songwriter, you also have a really strong handle on who you are as an artist and as a storyteller. And that, you know, I met a lot of behind the scenes songwriters who kind of do the work as a songwriter. But that's what I think is one of the most interesting things about you is like you have defined yourself as an artist in the truest sense that that is, not just as in just like this is the album cycle and this is my character that I'm embodying for this, but it comes across your personality and all of that within all of the videos that you create. And that's why like at the why we started there is why it made a lot of sense to me that you now are kind of dipping your toes into directing and writing and acting in this film realm. Because you're a storyteller, whether it's through your songwriting or your TikToks or now this short film, but you're a storyteller from your perspective, which is unique. And that's, you know, it makes you're a songwriter and a storyteller and an artist that I see a through line through everything. So it's like knowing the Bonnie McKee songs that are out there, whether they're Katy Perry or Tao Cruz or Kesha or Britney Spears or whomever, there's a sound, there's a style, there's an essence that shines through of Bonnie McKee. But then listening to your own artist songs, like, oh yeah, that's, I mean, very clearly you, American Girl, it's just like, it's right in line with that catalog. That's why I'm loving this Spotify playlist, because it's like, oh yeah, this is all Bonnie McKee. It all sounds like Bonnie McKee. And then seeing your TikTok, which is so interesting. This is a thing that a lot of artists struggle with is they don't know how to make everything cohesive. And, you know, you like listen to the music and then you see their Instagram or their TikTok and it's all over the place. And they don't have any definition or understanding of who they are. And I think because of just your history through the industry and now having so many experiences, you really have a strong handle on who you are as an artist, and that really shines through. So I think that's why people are gravitating towards you and towards all of this so much more naturally now.
Thank you so much. Yeah, one of the most difficult parts about just being a songwriter is that I'm a really visual artist. Mm. And so I really had no say in what the music video would look like and the artwork and any of that. And that's like a big part of my artistry. And that's also why I got into directing, where I was like, I want to make pictures. I want to paint a picture. I want to tell a story through the visuals as well. And before the pandemic, I was kind of going around talking to different labels about the new album that I've made. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple of people say to me, people that I respect and people that I know love me and I've known for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I would walk in and be like, here's an amazing album on a silver platter. Here's all the artwork that's already done. I just want to do like a whatever. And they sat me down and were like, you still want to be an artist? You're still trying to be an artist? Mm. I was like, ugh. I'll just go jump off a cliff real quick.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
And the thing is like, I it's not a choice.
Yeah.
Like I am an artist, whether I like it or not. I wish that I could get rid of the bug that I have to perform and be front facing, but that's just who I am. And so I think that I tried to sort of repress that for a lot of years and I was miserable. I was so depressed. And so now that I'm like kind of coming into my own again, I'm just like, I'm ready to do it. And I don't really care if anybody, I mean, of course I want people to like it, but I don't care if my industry peers or whatever believe or not, because I do.
I mean, music isn't merely what we do, it's who we are. And at the core of that, it's, you know, having such success as a songwriter, but also understanding yourself enough to know that, you know, your definition, like you said, of success is happiness and understanding and feeling at ease with all of this. And so knowing yourself enough that it's like, you're not just going to be content writing songs for other people and to have that identity as an artist. It's like you said, it is who you are. It's never going to leave. Whether a suit in an office understands that or not doesn't matter, because you're an artist and that's just how it is and will always be.
Yeah. And one thing that I realized when I was really kind of miserable just being a songwriter, because I was miserable for a long time, was that I was making success my higher power. And that is a really dangerous place to be, because I have no control over whether something is successful. I have no control over whether the industry wants me or the fans react. That's out of my hands. So the most important thing to me and being successful in the new music industry is enjoying the process and not getting caught up in the results and not being devastated if everything doesn't go my way, because that's out of my hands.
Ugh. Woo! That's I just went to church. That's great. That was fantastic. Well, Bonnie, this has been incredible. It's so helpful. And I know the songwriters that are listening to this are just so grateful for your wisdom and for dropping so many gems that you have. I have one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
What it means to me to make it in the new music business is to be, I just want to enjoy myself. I want to find joy in my work. And I think that is more available to me now than it ever was, because through social media and TikTok and things like that, all the tools that I have at my disposal, I have a direct line to my audience, and that makes me happy. So I would say that my idea of winning is just being able to enjoy myself and staying out of the rat race.
Bonnie McKee, thank you so much. That's great.
Thank you.
Today's episode was edited by Maxton Hunter, theme music by Brass Roots District, and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.